Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, everyone. Welcome in to the weekend edition of the KE Report. This is the, I guess, holiday edition, we can call it, as it is airing on what Canadians like to call Boxing Day, the day after Christmas. That's actually in Canada when you get a lot of the deals in terms of retail stores, kind of like Black Friday in the U.S., but in Canada, we call it Boxing Day, happens right after Christmas. I have a full show planned this weekend, and we're going to be talking, or more or less recapping, some of the investing successes that my guests have had this last year, and some of the themes that they are looking at more for next year. We're starting off in the resource and precious metals focused, as I am chatting with Dave Erfley. Just to remind everybody, Dave is the founder and editor of the Junior Miner Junkie. Also joins me pretty much every week throughout the year to share his insights on the precious metals and some of the stocks that he is recommending. I really like Dave's newsletter, so if anyone hasn't checked it out and you are interested in precious metals investing in the stocks, it's well worth a visit, and at least give Dave a shot because he shares exactly what he's investing in with all of you. Dave, let's start by recapping this last year. Can you give me one, two, maybe three stocks that you did really well on this last year? Some of the standout investments in your newsletter and portfolio, please.
Yeah, sure, Corey, and thanks for having me on the weekend edition. My biggest gainer was by far Discovery Metals. They have a huge project in Mexico, and it's lower grade silver, but it's already been proved up to 500 million ounces of lower grade silver. But the company's in the process of exploring a higher grade starter pit, and it's implementing a phased approach to building the mine, which would significantly reduce the upfront capex. And moreover, you know, it's run by a serially successful management team of the Oxygen Capital Group, along with being, I think, Eric Sprott's either largest or one of his largest investments in the silver space. He owns 20% of the company, and they're fully funded through 2022 with $80 million in cash, which is quite a high cash hoard for a smaller silver developer.
Okay, so one of these silver stocks sounds like a more advanced silver stock, and something to consider, even though silver had a good year, but is still way, way off of its all-time highs. What other stocks, too, Dave, that you did well on this year that I assume you still hold?
Yeah, I do still hold Discovery Metals, and also another silver play is Aftermath Silver. They've got three really good high-grade projects. Two of them are in Peru, but their flagship is the Chayacolo silver-gold project in Chile, and they just put out a mineral resource estimate on that project. And that company's done really, really well for me. So, you know, the silver space is really starting to heat up here, and I expect silver to have a very good 2021. So, you know, it's no surprise that two of my best winners this year are silver plays.
Okay, so silver seems to be a trend heading into next year for you, and silver down in, I guess, Mexico and in South America. Let's talk about that strategy then heading into next year, because silver has generally been outperforming gold, at least in the near term. But again, gold reached all-time highs. Silver is still almost 50% away from all-time, or 100% away from all-time highs, 50% off of their all-time highs of a decade ago. Does that mean you're looking at more leverage in the silver plays in terms of ounces in the ground, or is it going to be more a strategy of looking at some of the exploration stocks?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing about silver, Corey. You know, when it runs, it runs pretty fast, and it runs pretty far. But the windows are smaller than gold, and silver always starts later than gold when the bull market in gold begins. I vividly remember back when I first got into the space back in 2003, the gold price had already nearly doubled, yet silver had not done much of anything. So I really started to do a lot of research in silver, and I bought a lot of physical silver in 2005 at around $5 an ounce, and I still have it. And silver did not start to move until about 2006. And by 2008, when the financial crisis hit and silver got hit pretty hard, like it did back here in March, it got hit down to 850, right around there. But it went from 850 in 2008 to $49 in 2011. So even though silver always gets a late start on gold, they usually peak out at the same time, and the windows of opportunity are a lot smaller. So I think that window of opportunity right now is here in silver. So I think we could see some really strong moves in 2021 in the silver space.
Okay, let's start at the top of the pyramid for silver stocks. So some of the silver producers, there's only really a handful of pure silver plays out there when it comes to production, but there are a few new stories that have also come into the market this last year. How do you view the production plays and some of these newer production plays?
Yeah, that's the other thing, Corey, about silver is there's really not a lot of quality silver plays out there. So that's why it's beneficial to find a really good quality silver play, because when you do, they really make strong moves because they have really good leverage to silver. I think the producers, you know, you've got two of them that are on the New York Stock Exchange that have good leverage to silver, and that's First Majestic and Endeavor Silver. And I think in Endeavor Silver, I'm not a shareholder of either one. I did really well with First Majestic in the 2008 run-up, but what I was looking for in this cycle is the next First Majestic, like the next growth-oriented producer. And I think a company like America's Gold and Silver, who have really not had a very good year, I think they have a strong possibility of being that. I mean, they've got three projects, one gold and two silver, and their Relief Canyon mine, which has had problems in startup. And they've just come into commercial production on that right now. And I think they'll ramp up to full production in April. So they're going to have a lot of cash flow from that, but they're two silver projects. One of them, Eric Sprott, is the old Galena mine in the Silver Valley in Idaho. He owns 40% of that and cashed them up to explore that. And they're coming up with a lot more silver there, and they're finding it at only like $5 an ounce discovery price. So I'm sorry, 5 cents an ounce discovery price. So they've proved up over 100 million ounces there already in this drill program, and I think their target is 190 million ounces by the middle of 2021. Don't quote me on that. I'm not sure, but then they've got the Cosala operation in Mexico, which has been closed down by a blockade there, which kind of has been a blessing, because while that's been going on, the silver price is going up. They got the mine on care and maintenance. So once they get that problem resolved, we had a similar situation happen to Equinox, and I believe they've resolved that problem. So once that problem's resolved, there's over 100 million ounces of high-grade silver in those operations, and it's closed down now while the silver price is going up. So maybe, with a little bit of luck, they'll have all three of these projects going full steam in 2021. So, and then the stock will be set for a very strong re-rate by the market.
Yeah, America's Gold and Silver, actually had them on the show about a week and a half ago. And it's an interesting turnaround story, especially, well, we'll view how it all works next year when they actually do turn that around. Dave, when it comes to jurisdiction, though, we're kind of all over the place here. Discovery Metals, Aftermath Silver, both in different areas. America's Gold and Silver, that's also in a different area. Are you partial to any certain jurisdiction when it comes to silver stocks?
Yeah, Corey, I really like Mexico. You know, Mexico is always a great jurisdiction for silver. And Peru is good also. But as far as early stage permitting, that could be a bit of a problem if you're a company that needs permits to drill. There's something called a consulta previa permit that you need to get there in some of these projects. And they're very difficult to obtain now that the country is on, I believe, their seventh mining minister in the last 5 years. I mean, the permitting red tape there is not getting any better. So if you're a company like Aftermath, though, you know, both of their projects are later stage and they already have their permits. So they're okay as far as permitting is concerned. But if you're going to if you're going to go into Peru into an early stage exploration company that needs permits, you might want to call the company and make sure that they've got a fast track to get those permits.
So, Dave, when it comes to then analyzing some of the silver stocks that have ounces in the ground, what do you put more weight in right now for leverage to the silver price? Is it actual ounces in the ground or is it high-grade ounces in the ground? Because in all fairness, it sounds like some of your other investments, the ones that have done well, even Discovery Metals, they are more of a low-grade asset. Yes, with the higher-grade starter pit.
Yes, yes. I mean, grade obviously is key. If you do have a company that is an optionality play that has a lot of ounces in the ground, but they are lower grade, you have to be careful with that because, you know, if they don't have a clear path to a higher grade area and they're not doing some exploration work and bringing up higher grades, then you have to be a lot more patient with companies like that because they're going to need higher silver prices to be economic. But yes, I mean, grade is something that I look at for sure.
All right. Well, Dave, we'll wrap it up there. And you know what? It seems like silver is going to be a focus for you. I know that you also do hold a number of gold positions too. And you and I have talked about some of the other commodities out there, especially the ones that have been breaking out at the end of the year and really outlining if those have some potential. But sounds like silver is going to be your focus early on this year, and it really just comes down to doing due diligence onto these individual stocks, and boy, oh boy, a lot of stocks have done well this year, so hopefully we can continue that momentum throughout next year. Dave, it's great having you on the show. Thank you again for taking time on this weekend show. I hope you have a very happy new year, a great end to your year. Thanks for your time, Dave.
Thanks a lot, Corey, and happy holidays and a happy new year to all your listeners. And thanks again for having me on.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout. Your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
All right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report and continuing on with the trend we started in the first segment, looking back through 2020 and recapping some of the better winners in the resource sector and some of the strategies heading into next year. I am chatting in this segment with Brian London. He is the editor of the Gold Newsletter. Also runs the New Orleans Investment Conference. Brian, kick us off with some of the winners, some of your good investments this year, 2020, that provided you with some good profits and maybe even ones that you think still could go. But first and foremost, I want to hear which stocks were your favorite in terms of returns this current year.
Well, thanks, Corey. Great to be with you. You know, looking back at this year, I think whereas the whole rising tide lifted all boats after we got past that first immediately post-COVID turmoil, I think some of the bigger winners, at least in our portfolio, were the silver stocks and those companies, primarily gold, that had large resources, identified resources. And, and we saw both of those rise considerably. In the silver sector, Aftermath was one of our big winners. We recommended it at 18 cents. Toward the end of 2019, actually, we recommended it at 18 cents, and most of its run was actually this year. So that's been close to currently it's about a seven bagger for us in Gold Newsletter. So that's been a big winner. And looking down our list, there's a number of other ones. BlackRock Gold was another silver play, actually, even though it's called BlackRock Gold. It was another three or four bagger for us as an exploration play in the silver space. And of course, there's Great Bear. Much of its gains were this year, but I guess last year as well. But right now in Gold Newsletter, that's about a 25 bagger for us. And in our alert service, it got up to as much as a 55-1 winner for us. So those are some of the bigger ones. Impact Silver is, you know, a leverage. Just looking at my list now in our portfolio, that was a leveraged silver play that was a slam dunk way to lever the rise in silver. And it did so. It's went up about four times this year for us from the lows. And I think that's really one of the big themes of this year is the silver plays. And as you know, those have come back from their peaks in, say, August or thereabouts. And I think they're going to be a big theme early on in the new year. I think they're going to come back. You know, they rose very quickly for a reason. And that's because the fundamental, and really technical, but the fundamental story for gold was so powerful that we had entered into a big bull market. And if you want to leverage the move in gold, you really want to be in silver. And then if you want to leverage the move in silver, you want to be in the silver stocks and even more leverage toward the junior end of the spectrum. So it's leverage on top of leverage on top of leverage on top of a secular move that looks like it's going to last for years. And, you know, we're playing that. I think it's going to work again. I think early on in the new year is typically a time when we have a rally in the precious metals, or at least a period of seasonal strength in gold and silver. And from the December lows to the January to even June highs, somewhere in that move, you see those companies, again, that have large established resources. I'm thinking companies like Gold Mining Inc., First Mining, those kinds of companies that have large resources, they also do well. And in this case, I think the major producers, although we don't really cover those much in Gold Newsletter, I think those are going to really be big movers in the new year too, because they're extremely undervalued relative to the cash flow that they're spinning out right now.
Okay, so you're seeing a lot of opportunity in the resource sector. Let's take it kind of one by one here. First being silver plays, because, well, that follows up perfectly with the first segment, and Dave Erfle also saying that he likes the silver stocks, but he was saying he likes some of the ones with more resources in the ground, ones that can provide that immediate torque. Where are you focusing? Are you focusing on the ones that have been around for a while that can, I guess, say that they have some resources in the ground, maybe something like that Impact Silver? Or are you still looking at some of these explorers that most of them, almost all of them, are cashed up?
Yeah, I guess we're focusing more on the exploration end, companies that may have resources but look to expand those. You know, a lot of the new silver plays coming in are and have been acquiring projects that have either small compliant resources or small to fairly significant non-compliant historical resources, where you have a good idea that with a bit of work, they're going to bring in considerable compliant resources to the table. You know, these companies have really snapped up a lot of those projects. That was the key with Aftermath. They had a couple of projects that gave them somewhere over 50 million ounces of historic resources, at least. And then they got the Barangaroo project that brought them into a whole nother level that I still don't think the market is fully appreciating and giving them full credit for. So that's kind of the story. Earlier stage exploration companies that have a good line on some resources, but look to increase them significantly. Those are that's kind of the area where we focus on right now.
Okay. Now, you also brought up these optionality plays or mineral banks, as some call these stocks that really just build up ounces in the ground. They don't necessarily need to be economic, but they go out and acquire a lot of different projects and really market the fact that they have X million ounces of gold resources in their portfolio. This is usually just a play on the underlying precious metals price, but why are you getting drawn into some of these over some of the other companies that maybe drive a little bit more news flow?
Well, I guess because we kind of started that sector, you know, way back when in the early 90s, Jim Blanchard, you know, who founded Gold Newsletter and everything we have today, was a big believer in these optionality plays. He had gotten a lot of experience and made a lot of money in the late 60s and early 70s by investing in these South African gold stocks, which as the world gold price rose, saw their balance sheets expand dramatically as new reserves just all of a sudden fell into the economic realm. And that's kind of the way that the South African mining industry worked. They knew exactly how much gold they had, but they had cutoffs at various gold prices. And until the price of the metal reached those prices, those reserves were valued at zero. But as soon as they went into the economic realm, they were suddenly valued at huge values that gave the precipitated a dramatic increase in the share price. And he experienced seeing things like companies like Durban, Rutherford Deep at the time go up 40 times over a very short period of time as the gold price rose. So he actually went out and started creating these resource banks in silver initially because there weren't any real silver pure plays out there. So he started Silver Standard, which is now SSR Mining, and God knows how many times over that went up for Gold Newsletter subscribers, 50 to 100 times thereabouts, especially if you include some of the spinoffs. At the same time, Ross Beaty started Pan American Silver with precisely the same idea. So it is something that's kind of ingrained in our legacy here at Gold Newsletter, that these kinds of plays very quickly, without doing a bit of work, all of a sudden their established resources are valued much more highly, and you see a concomitant rise in the share prices. So it's not even a process where over 2-3 years they drill off a resource. It's an immediate market revaluation, re-rating of value that's sitting there in the ground.
All right, let's go. One other aspect is explorers. So we have advanced explorers, and we also have some of the smaller market cap, not nearly as advanced explorers. Some of the advanced ones come to mind is something like Great Bear that has already increased its market cap so much, but it has also pulled back. Great Bear, you could argue, maybe puts a little downside protection because it is a bit more drilled out, a lot of drilling done at that project now. Or some of the smaller companies that, quite frankly, maybe only have one or two phases of a drill program under their belt and are still working to understand potentially how big a resource could be. How are you balancing out investments in these two different stage explorers?
Well, we still like Great Bear because it does have a bit of downside protection. I think it's going to eventually be taken out somewhere over a double of where it is right now. It's just a matter of time, and a lot of drilling has been done, but a lot more to come on that. So I think that's still got lots of upside to it, but it's more of an institutional play right now. If you want to be playing in the really high potential junior end, then you can look at these explorers. You know, we just talked about the silver explorers. That whole sector has come back from its, say, August highs and those really red hot levels of enthusiasm. But we saw silver plays at that point in the market coming out with, you know, good projects with some resources, et cetera. But they were coming onto the market at $30 million market caps and getting over 50 pretty quickly. Now we're seeing some of these silver plays come out there that are in the, you know, $10 million market cap range. And I think some of those are where we really need to look right now as potential big movers in the new year as this enthusiasm for the metals comes back and as investors start looking for the stocks that have been kind of left behind during this recent consolidation.
Any other stocks that you want to wrap us up with here, Brian, that you're either watching, that you've recently purchased, that you think could have some near-term news flow and catalysts?
Yeah, I like, you know, we were talking about silver, but I like Montage Gold Corp. Right now, they're coming out with a new resource estimate probably in January that could be a quite considerable increase from where they are now. And they already have about 1 million ounces and the Ivory Coast. So I think that's a big play. Great management team, great backing. I like Fabled Silver and Gold right now. It's one of those kind of new silver stories, very small resource right now, but some potential to rapidly increase that. And it has a very low market cap right now relative to where these silver stocks are and have been. So yeah, I like those two right now.
Okay. Hey, Brian, great having you on the show. I really appreciate all the time you spend with us. And I always enjoy your conference. This year it had to move online. Hopefully we can all get back to New Orleans soon enough. But in the meantime, I continue to read over your newsletter. And again, I appreciate you joining us on Daily Editorials and on our weekend show. Hope you have a great rest of your holiday season here, Brian. And I look forward to chatting with you in the new year.
You too. Best of the holidays and a great new year to you. You and yours, Corey.
To find out more about today's guests, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment. Providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
All right, welcome back. Continuing on with the weekend edition of the KE Report and continuing on with this trend of looking at 2020 and some of the better performing resource stocks and then looking ahead to what some of my guests think will be or should be the focus for 2021. I'm chatting with John Kaiser, founder and editor of Kaiser Research. Now, John, let's start off with some of your best picks and predictions in 2020. Let's start off with some of the precious metal stocks. Please give us some insights on initially one stock that you and your subscribers did well on this year.
Well, Corey, the biggest performer this year has been SK Mining Corp, which is a junior I've covered as a bottom fish for quite a few years based on its SK project to the south of the original SK Creek mine. It's been called Sib, Lulu, and Corey. And I made them a favorite at 22 cents in late June when they started to finally raise money to do a serious rethink of this project. The original SK Creek project that Skeena now controls 100%, it's only about 10 kilometers. There's another 25 to 30 kilometers of the same trend to the south. And all the work has been pretty much focused in that northern part with the Lulu zone and then scattered around in the southern part, not very coherent. And late last year, they brought in a new team headed by John DeDecker, who's done a complete rethink of all the geology. They brought Quentin Henney in. In fact, Quentin was the one who brought John DeDecker in to take a look at the VMS potential. And yesterday they released results from half of the hole, 20 holes they drilled in the TV Jeff area. They are not yet in SK Creek 2 discovery, but they include high gold and silver grades within the mudstone units, similar to what the Lulu is and what Skeena has been encountering below the contact mudstone, which is the event horizon where the fluid spewed onto the ocean floor and built that 2.5 million ton SK Creek, the 21B zone deposit. So these two targets are 1,800 meters apart. It's not yet a major discovery, but there's so much evidence of this VMS-style fluid flow passing through these rocks, leaving gold and silver around, and they're just starting to figure out the geology. They drilled these holes before they had the geophysical survey results. So when they go back in there in July, this project will be the most watched project in the Golden Triangle in terms of producing another SK Creek scale discovery. And if they were to find something like that, at today's metal prices, it's worth $4.4 billion, which is, even though this stock's at the already $1.80 today, the $400 million implied value, that's still a potential $19 future price target for this type of play. So that was the best play so far this year for my batch of favorites.
Yeah, no kidding, John. Even, you know, it's ending the year very strongly, too, by the drill results that were released this week. I know a lot of companies hold back on some news because they think that the market is slow on these shortened holiday weeks, which it usually is. But SK Mining goes to show that if you release some good drill holes, your stock can almost double with on the back of those drill results. John, you even said, though, they are getting back these results. They have most likely a better understanding of what is underground here, but they're not going to be able to get back onto the site in terms of drilling until summer, say July. What do you think in the meantime could drive this stock? Or does SK Mining turn into a stock that you just need to watch into next year because of the lack of, well, a drill program starting up in the near term?
Well, the backdrop, of course, is what are gold and silver going to do? And so far, they haven't reported any meaningful zinc copper results, which is what you expect when you get into the actual exhalative VMS pile. But if gold and silver trend higher in 2021, this stock will track that also. But yeah, they just raised $13.8 million between 90 cents and $1.25. That comes free trading in 4 months. That's still 2 or 3 months before the drilling resumes. So, you know, there's not a huge amount of, news flow coming to help them up, except general anticipation that this is going to be a huge play. They finally properly financed it to explore it, and they have some deep geological thinking behind there that they hoover up every piece of information they gather and put it into their model. It's not the old scattershot approach where you have guys just poking holes here and there hoping to get lucky, and when they don't, they move on.
Let's move on here, John, because you know what? I do like SK Mining. I also like a couple other Golden Triangle explorers, but the news has been slow in terms of drill results. What other stocks in the precious metals sector have you done well on this year?
The big surprise was Galway Metals, which started the year off as a 34-cent favorite because of the Clarence Steam project. They also have the Astrades base metals project in Western Quebec, but that kind of fell by the wayside. They focused on Clarence Steam. When that funding window opened in May, June, these guys went to town and loaded the treasury. They're now well-funded right through next year. Clarence Stream is an intrusion-related gold system. It was found 15, 20 years ago by Free West and ended up in this company. And this is a brute force thing. You have to keep drilling, slowly stitch all the zones together. And they will ultimately demonstrate this to be a multi-million ounce district with high grade potential. The initial new resource estimate based on all the zones they've discovered since taking on the project, we will get that sometime next year. And it was up to $1.50, $1.60 at one point. Right now it's trading around $1.16 as part of that general gold pullback. This crazy market doesn't seem to understand that $1,800 to $1,900 gold is absolutely fantastic. They seem to always want gold to be trending higher. So right now, all these advanced gold companies are kind of stalled, but it's up about 250% from its starting point earlier this year.
So, John, when it comes to news continuing out of Galway here, I see some of their recent news releases do show some high-grade gold and also some lower-grade gold over much larger strike lengths. So one of the more recent news releases was 1.5 grams per ton gold over 34.3 meters. But then there's also this high-grade result of about almost 34 grams per ton gold over close to 5 meters. What's more attractive to you here? Is it the high-grade component or is it this larger low-grade component?
See, this is a stock that has a hard time getting market response to news because people don't know what it means. Is it making this zone bigger or smaller? This is why I think in 2021, they will also revisit the Astrades project where they have all these copper zinc zones already outlined to a certain depth. But the market didn't want to hear about base metals this year until in the past couple of months. Base metal stocks have actually done quite well. But with the VMS type target, once you get your geophysics in there and you can outline and see where it is, then you just add money and start drilling. They couldn't afford to do that at the beginning of 2020 because everybody's attitude is you're a failure until proven otherwise. We now have a market that where the glass is at least half full. So while they continue to plod along and have all the engineers do their resource calculations and come up with underground mining zones and also open pittable zones, some of the stuff's near surface, so it could be a series of shallow open pits. They could also go back and revisit the Astrades play. And there is some gold enrichment in that area in some of the zones. And they could start telling, okay, we're going to drill some deep holes to see if these anomalies that we see down plunge are for real. So that could create a balance of excitement in 2021 to counter, waiting for the resource estimate and waiting for the gold price to trend higher.
All right, John, let's also look to some of the base metals plays, or at least one base metals play that you have done well on. No doubt base metals have really come on strong at the end of the year, but give us a stock, please, that you like and have liked.
The big surprise winner is my FPX Nickel, which I've covered for 10 years. They have that super low-grade Dakar project. It's like 0.12%. Nickel in central British Columbia, but it's a special type of nickel. It's a natural stainless steel called a Werowite. And this year they hit a major milestone in completing a PEA, which shows that this project is worth over $1 billion. It does have a high $1.8 or $7 billion capex related to it, but it is a 40-year mine. It's the kind of thing that a major would want to acquire. It's in a safe jurisdiction. They may even be able to achieve the holy grail of the mining industry, which is carbon dioxide neutrality, because the tailings have been demonstrated to have an ability to soak up carbon dioxide, sequester it away, so that when they do all their calculations, they could end up being carbon neutral. And there's this huge ESG trend that's wakening up now. It's part of the this idea that the elites, the one percenters, they have the key to solving this climate change problem because their carbon dioxide consumption footprint is double that of the bottom half of the world's populations and population in terms of net worth. And they can choose to buy brands such as a Tesla, which demonstrate that they have very good ESG credentials. So this deposit, which requires $7.75 as a base case price for nickel, which we are not very far off from right now, this could become of interest to a producer which can certify all the nickel comes from this single source. Here are the carbon dioxide footprints. It's not like buying it from the LME where it could have a Russian nickel from the nasty, dirty, polluting Norilsk mine mixed in with it. So this ability to offer a product with ESG credentials, that's part of a major new wave in the new year. And they are also doing work on making nickel sulfate, which is the key input for the battery market, confirming that this is a reality. And that would be huge because the electric vehicle sector is accelerating far faster than everybody anticipated several years ago when people like myself were skeptical about EV adoption happening. But the adoption is happening very, very rapidly. The battery sector is getting tremendous research R&D into it to make the batteries better so that they charge faster and hold their charge longer. So FPX Nickel up 300%. It's been up 400%. Started at 16 cents. Now it's 65 cents. If you take the PEA seriously, which I think you should, this is going to disappear somewhere between the $2 and $4 range in the next couple of years as a big entity takes this out.
Yeah, it's been nice to see FBX Nickel get some more love from the market. I like the team there and the story. They've just kept the story going. They haven't blown out their share structure or blown out their cash, and now they're finally getting some love. So it is nice to see. John, in terms of 2021, what are some of your favorites in terms of sectors and potentially even driving down into the stocks?
Well, if gold can hang in here at these levels, I would be very happy. Technically, if you have a Biden administration in charge of America's destiny over the next 4 years, that should be good for gold. But if the Republicans keep control of the Senate, they'll probably do what they did in 2011 and discover that, oh, debt does matter, only not when we're in charge. So they'll impose austerity restrictions on that, and that could create a sluggish economic recovery from the pandemic once we get this behind us in the second half year. And that could have a dampening effect on gold. On the other hand, everybody could come together and say, this COVID thing really sucked. The vaccine's vanquishing it. We need to come back and let's rebuild America. Demand for base metals go up. It's already going up because China has recovered from its COVID setback and it's now growing again. Much production was slowed down or new development 12, 10 years of a bear market. So copper's going strong. Nickel's going to be strong. Even zinc has come out of its funk and is over $1.20 a pound. And China, of course, has been the primary producer of that, about 40% of global supply. But if we get a growing economy, even zinc could end up establishing a better price. Other themes are, I think the critical metals space is going to get a lot more attention. Rare earths are part of the electric vehicle market, even though the batteries with cobalt and lithium have got all the attention, and copper is the wiring that makes electric vehicles go. Rare earths are still part of the magnets. Almost all of it comes from China, except what Lynas produces from Mount Weld in Australia. And the tension between China and the United States, I don't think it's going to get better under the Biden administration. So I think the quest for critical metals outside of China is going to go up. And part of this ESG movement that's really interesting is the China price is the China price because they have the lowest standards in terms of pollution, of health standards, and so on. And China being a dictatorship, they suppress all criticism of the government. So you can't trust anything that China says. So if you get a system like Robert Friedland's ABEX exchange, which is now gone public, which is a way to offer ESG certified metal into a market where it'll function as an auction and end users can bid on it. This is how you could end up seeing a premium price for Western sourced critical materials by branded entities such as Tesla, who want to be able to show that we get our metals from these locations. We're not getting the cheapest China price anymore because our clientele, we're offering a luxury premium product. They're actually willing to pay more to know that they are part of this process of reducing their carbon footprint in order to keep the world from reaching that tipping point, because the 99%ers can't do it. And this whole idea of asking them to make sacrifices and in order to save the planet for their children or grandchildren, that doesn't really fly with a lot of people. But if you're a 1%er, you have room to make sacrifices that don't really harm your basic necessities of life. So critical metals, I think, are going to be strong. And of course, exploration. We always have the scenario where, well, maybe the metal prices won't go up. They'll just sort of stay where they are. In which case, you have to look at exploration, which finds deposits that work at the prices we have. And that funding window we had from May through September, that was the best funding window since the first quarter of 2011. In my juniors, TSX juniors that I covered, the ones that have negative working capital, that used to be 50%. It's now only 35%. The system has been cashed up. The delays from COVID in terms of lab results and that have slowed down the ability to make the money disappear through exploration work. So we're heading into 2021 pretty cashed up for exploration. And some companies, of course, they're going to switch into feasibility demonstration, which is especially the case with the gold projects, which have languished while gold was stuck at $1,300. So I'm quite bullish going forward, even in kind of a lame scenario where gold stays stuck and also base metal stays stuck because the United States decides that it's just going to monitor its debt situation and not do anything to rebuild itself post-COVID.
All right. Well, John, thank you for those insights. A lot to take in terms of the different pull and push and pull in a lot of different resources. Before we wrap it up, though, can you give us a couple company names? We don't need any other further insight, but some company names that you are watching closely on top of the ones we just talked about into next year that you think maybe have some good work programs underway, please.
Okay, the consolidated wood jam is a bottom fish that I made a favorite in September. It started at 4 cents. It's now 20 cents. We're in the midst of raising $2 million. They have a copper deposit, couple hundred million tons, and next to it, a gold copper deposit that's smaller, but where they're doing exploration to show that the gold persists at depth and that this could be a gold primary system. So if we get gold going up and exploration success, that becomes a gold story. But if we get copper going up, then that southeast zone becomes interesting, and they have a target nearby, an IP target, which has a similar footprint that has not been properly tested. And if they could end up doubling that resource, that could also do very well. And in the copper area, Serengeti Resources, they are merging with Sun Metals. There will be a 2-for-1 rollback, but you get the Marco Day financing powerhouse blended in with this company. There's synergies between Stardust and the Quanica project, and Serengeti also has the EastNIV project, which they generated from scratch, which is basically an untested copper-gold porphyry system in British Columbia, which could be an entirely new discovery when they get around to drilling it. So you get a gold and copper potential there. And then if you want a long-shot type story, there's Endurance Gold, which has a large land position in Alaska that they hope to finance next year. But they have a little project called Reliance near the Braylon project that Talisker is tackling. They did some shallow RC drilling to get some sense of how the super oxidized portion of this 2-kilometer strike of what yielded high gold grades in the past. They think this is like Braylon, except higher up in the system. And they will tackle that in the new year. And that was one of my big winners this year that I can't really count because it went from 2.5 cents up 400% to its current 13.5 cent level. But it's the kind of high grade story, 4-hour drive from Vancouver, which could be the big surprise from an exploration, high grade gold exploration perspective in 2021.
All right. Excellent, John. Thank you for your insights. Great chatting with you this year. I look forward to following up on a lot of these themes as we enter 2021 and even move through the year, because as much as we can all make predictions on how next year is going to turn out, I think this year really was a wake-up call to remind everybody that anything can happen. Hopefully, 2021 is a bit smoother than the year we just went through. John, thanks for your time, buddy. I hope you have a great rest of your holiday season.
Yes, thank you, Corey, and the same to you and your family.
All right, welcome back here to wrap up the weekend edition of the KE Report. We are getting a company update from Aztec Minerals and the president and CEO, Simon Dykowski. Aztec is traded on the TSX Venture Exchange under the symbol AZT and on the OTCQB under the symbol AZZTF. Now, Simon, I wanted to bring you on the weekend show because the company released some pretty significant drill results on Tuesday, December 22nd. These drill results are coming from the Tombstone Project in southeastern Arizona. You and I have talked a lot about this phase one drill program that was about 3,000 meters. The news release was the last five holes from this 21-hole program. And if you take the width and the grade of some of these results, they are the best results to date of this phase one program. The headline numbers, a little over 6 grams per ton gold equivalent over almost 8 meters, and a much broader interval of 0.62 grams per ton gold equivalent over 140 meters. Simon, give us a quick little update on these final five holes and this phase one drill program. What has it shown you about this Tombstone project?
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Corey. And we were very pleased to be able to get these results out to the market before the end of the year. And as you pointed out, they did represent the best drill results of the 3,000 meter program that we commenced back in August. It's our phase one program. We have now actually, with the 3,000 meters and the spend associated with it, we've now vested our 75% interest in the project. And what excites us about these numbers are that they are very consistent, wide zones of epithermal gold and silver mineralization. They're shallow and they're concentrated around the center of the contention open pit. So they demonstrate that there is likely significantly more unmined mineralization in the past producing contention pit than we had, or that all previous operators had thought. So it's been a successful program through and through. We were very fortunate to finish strong. I would point out hole 20 was very significant in that it averaged over a gram of gold equivalent over 80 meters, and that represents a true width of the mineralization in that trend, in that particular part of the open pit. So again, we're thrilled. Every release we've put out over those 21 holes, 19 of those holes have showed very consistent mineable widths of above cutoff grade gold and silver mineralization in a shallow open pit heap leachable environment. So a great start and a great way to vest our 75% interest in the project.
So this drill program really came from three general spokes, a south spoke, a central spoke, and a north spoke on this contention pit that was really just you guys getting an understanding of the mineralization and the potential size of the project so far. What is the overall strike length from the drilling in this phase one program that you guys have proven out there is some mineralization?
Yes. So the strike length stands now at 830 meters from spoke to spoke. As you pointed out, we oriented the drilling around three general setups, one at the north end of the pit, one at the center, one in the south. And the mineralization remains open to the south. So it's at least 830 meters. And the mineralized corridor stands at about 200 meters wide, give or take. So it's a large area for us to explore. We felt it prudent to focus our efforts really on those three zones to start before taking a break over the Christmas holidays here and into January and really analyzing what we've seen and determining our strategy to further develop it with the next phases of drilling. So it's really given us a good indication at a high level, and now we'll literally drill down deeper into the nitty-gritty of how we can advance this towards potentially an initial resource estimate and look at where the most prospective parts of this project lie.
So what does that process look like? What drilling are you guys planning for next year? What would a time frame be for an initial resource? Give us a little bit more information here.
Certainly. So the time frame in the next few months stands as firstly, we'll review what we've accomplished. So we have 3,000 meters of drill core to review. We'll have it interpreted by our technical team. And we have the business, of course, of finalizing our joint venture. So while we have earned now with our work commitment a 75% interest in the project, we still have to formalize the joint venture agreement with our partners, which we don't see as any kind of impediment, but it's something to tick off a box, if you will, to check off the list in January. At that point, we'll move into planning our phase two drill program, which we expect to start in the first quarter of next year. And, you know, there's not much more I can say beyond that, other than we will interpret the data that we have, design a phase two project that will accomplish some infill drilling over the next few months, and use that towards putting together a resource estimate. It could come together quicker than investors might think, given that it's fairly consistent mineralization. It's shallow and it's in an open pitable heap leach environment, but it's a little bit too early to give specifics as to when we expect that. But suffice it to say, we'll be working towards that with our next round of drilling starting in the first quarter of 2021.
Okay, now that's important to understand, because this project, as long as what you're seeing here continues to remain true, looks like it could be a shallow oxide deposit, a very straightforward mining operation. Obviously, that's much further down the road, but in terms of how to chase that, the drilling then, I assume, will stay fairly close to surface. It would just continue to step out, trying to show the overall size, potential scale here.
Yes, so it will likely be oriented on more of a grid pattern, and it'll test areas in between the spokes that we drilled this fall of 2020. And we do also have plans to test our deeper CRD style target as well, and that will likely be a component of our next phase of drilling. So we'll have some exploration drilling and some infill drilling, a nice mix of both. To provide a better look at what the project holds.
So after this drill program, you even outlined that you guys are now 75% owners of this project. What are some of the remaining terms of this option agreement?
The remaining terms include a share payment of 600,000 shares of Aztec to the vendors, as well as a nominal cash payment of around $30,000, I believe. And our $1 million of cumulative work on the project has now been spent. So it's really subject to their review of our expenditures, which we don't expect any issues with, and making the final payments of cash and shares. And we'll have a joint venture formed where we'll have a partnership with another company that will be providing 25% of the capital thereabouts to advance onto the next stages of development.
So are there any other assets or companies or mines, for that matter, that have a similar footprint or characteristic to what you're seeing at the Tombstone Project?
Yeah, good question, Corey. It's obviously we're early to be looking at comparisons to other mines, but one transaction or a company in the news that I'll point out that's been in the news recently, rather, is Northern Vertex Mining, who operate a heap leach gold operation in northwestern Arizona called the Moss Mine, which they're having great success with developing right now, and they're drilling off some new zones. But at last stand, they were looking at a resource of about 500,000 ounces, and from their disclosures, it looks like they're ramping up to about 50,000 ounces a year of gold production. So they've recently announced that they're looking to become a consolidator in the southwestern United States with their recent acquisition of Eclipse Mining. So Eclipse Gold, but it's interesting. The area definitely seems to be heating up when you see transactions like that, especially with operators that are developing and running gold, silver heap leaches in Arizona. So that could very well be a comp for us going forward.
Yeah, it was an interesting deal between Eclipse Gold and Northern Vertex. I had the guys from Eclipse on a couple times after that news broke to explain the deal in a little bit more color. And full disclosure, I am a shareholder of Eclipse Gold, also a shareholder of Aztec Minerals. Simon, how much money is still left in the bank for the company to progress into next year and potentially even start up another drill program?
We have about $2 million remaining in the treasury. In the summer, we raised approximately $3 million, and we generated some warrant proceeds in October of about $500,000. So we're financed to continue drilling. We're happy with our treasury. We've been able to complete this round of drilling within our prescribed budget. So we're good with cash for the moment, and we're happy with what we're seeing with the results.
Yeah, it was a nice end to the drill program, and that's why I wanted to bring you on, because, hey, these are drill results, the market responded positively to them, and it really just leads you into another drill program that I'm sure we'll get some more color on early next year. Simon, great chatting with you. Thank you for the update. Thank you for wrapping up this special holiday edition or Christmas edition of the KE Report. Everybody, please keep the emails coming. I love hearing from all of you. I will be at my computer all next week too because, well, quite frankly, there's nothing else to do. So please keep on sending me all your emails and all your questions for companies that I have featured on the show or ones that you think I should have on the show. I love hearing from all of you, and I continue to learn a lot from a lot of the emails and a lot of the companies that all of you are watching. Simon, again, great chatting with you, buddy. Have a great rest of your weekend and a very happy new year and a very happy end to the year.
Thanks very much, Corey. All the best to you, and hopefully we'll all have a bit of a better 2021. Thanks a lot.
For our upcoming appearance schedule, visit kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back in just a moment.